Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. This week's headlines tell of the shooting deaths of two black men by white police officers in Louisiana and Minnesota. They are the latest in a long list of officer-involved shooting deaths over the years, especially since the shooting death of Michael Brown by Ferguson police officer Darren Wilson almost 2 years ago. That incident put a new and concentrated focus on incidents of this sort. Now the overnight sniper attack in Dallas gives it all a brand new twist. Joining me in studio is Gregory Carr, Sr. He has been with us before and has also appeared on NPR talking about the Brown case on The Takeaway. Gregory Carr teaches at Harris Stowe State University. With him is his almost 15-year-old son, Gregory Carr, Jr. Gentlemen, thanks so much for being with us. Nice to see you.
Thank you. Good to see you again.
Thanks for having us.
Greg Carr, Sr., I'll start with you. Give me your take on what's been going on this week.
This take has been a whirlwind. It's clearly showing us that there's a division of race in the country. And one of the things that I wanted to address is, and I think we talked about it briefly, about the political discourse and the political climate. That's kind of fomenting a lot of this negative atmosphere. And one of the things that I'm taking from it is this has been an ongoing problem. And if we would have had more cameras in the 1960s or the 1950s, we would probably have seen more of it. But I think the advent of social media has changed the game, and 24-hour news cycles continuing to broadcast this information. But one of the things that I really want to address is this disparity. There was a lot of controversy from actor Jesse Williams from Grey's Anatomy. He did a speech on the BET Awards a few weeks ago, and he was pretty much lambasted by social media. But now it appears that what he said that night in his speech appears to be eerily prophetic.
What did he say?
He was basically saying, he was given a humanitarian award by BET, and he was very well known for getting involved with Ferguson. He actually came to Ferguson and has done a lot of interviews on CNN. He just simply said, I know that white police officers can de-escalate situations because there are many whites, and we've seen in social media, who are carrying knives, hatchets, guns, everything, that managed to walk away alive, but yet blacks who are unarmed, and sometimes in this case, both of them armed, seem to walk away dead. And so that a lot of people said that that was very racist, but it's very truthful.
Yeah. Greg Jr., let me get your take. Look at this situation through those almost 15-year-old eyes. What do you see?
I see a scared young man in a scary, cruel world. Almost 15. I'm afraid to drive. I'm afraid to jog out in my own neighborhood. I'm afraid to even work out in my front yard, because I feel like I'll be profiled by a police officer either passing by or a police officer already being there. And my take on this is anger, and that's it, just anger.
Are you angrier now than you were a year ago or 2 years ago? Has this week made a difference?
This week, I am angrier now than I was 2 years ago, because I was scrolling through my social media feed, and my friend sent me this thing, said, dude, you have to look at this. And I saw two black men in a period of 48 hours, both armed, but allegedly were reaching for their guns, both gunned down like animals. And I don't feel like they should have died like that.
Greg Sr., this anger that your son talks about seems to have reached all the way to Texas, and we see what happened overnight with a number of police officers and others shot. Obviously, for what little we know about it so far is that the one shooter, who is since deceased, said that he was angry because of what he had seen this week. What do you make of that?
I'm saddened. I deplore the loss of any human life. It doesn't matter whether it's a police officer or if it's an unarmed or armed civilian. It's sad. I was deeply saddened by it. I don't want to condone it, but as we talked about, this political atmosphere has almost given people license. And if you look at any of the Trump rallies or any of the protests, people are simply angry because they're not talking to one another. And because when people don't talk to one another, they talk at each other. And then the anger rises to the top. And then now we're resorting almost to a 60s level violence.
You've heard what your son just said about his anger and about his fears. The last time you and I talked was just after the Michael Brown shooting.
Yes.
And we were talking about, quote, the talk that black parents have to have with their kids to make them understand what's going on and how to act out there. What do you say to your son today? It's different and yet it's the same.
It is different because I had a very Southern father. He was from Kentucky. And his talk to his five sons was, and in his vernacular, he said, boy, if the man stops you, you say yes, sir, and no, sir. You don't raise your voice. You cooperate. You do whatever you're supposed to do. But to my millennial son, I have to translate it for him because I'm not from the South. I'm from the urban St. Louis. But at the same time, I've told him to keep yourself calm. Don't raise your voice, comply. And sadly enough, many of the individuals that have been involved in these police shootings have been in compliance. So there's a bigger issue. And so now I tell my son, you need to know what your rights are too. So we've discussed rights. We've discussed what you can say. For example, last night I was sharing with my son, I was being tailed by a police officer. And I could tell I was being tailed. And I turned off into an area, a lit area, and the police officer drove past. And I told him, I said, if you ever get in a situation, there are things you can do that are within the law to make sure you get yourself to a safe area, because a lot of these things are happening in darkened and isolated areas. And when things tend to happen where they're more populated areas, people can take pictures.
Greg Jr., does that make you feel any better, any more safe? Does it give you any comfort to have instructions of this kind?
It makes me feel a little safe. But then again, it doesn't help that much. Because these two shootings that have taken place, they were both caught on camera by people who were nearby. And me driving into a place or walking into a place with cameras, I don't think that would change the situation.
Do you think the omnipresence of cameras these days, the fact that they are everywhere, is a good thing or a bad thing? Is it a good thing to be seeing these things on television or on your phone seconds after they happen or even while they're happening?
I think it is a good thing because it rallies people and inspires people to get out there and just help end this mindless violence.
Greg Sr., what do you think? I think it also tends to make some people angry, as we have seen.
It does. And I think that anger is not a bad emotion in and of itself. It's what you do with the anger. We've discussed, once again, I've been very fortunate. The thing that led me to NPR and to St. Louis Public Radio was one of my mentors and good friends. He's a professor at Emerson College in Boston. His name is Jabari Asim. He was actually a resident here and a journalist here. Actually, he used to be a journalist for the Washington Post. And he sent a social media posting that said, we have to change the narrative. And I like that idea. And once I get an idea from somebody I really respect, I pass it on. And one of the biggest things that, you know, because I teach public speaking and I teach in the humanities, I'm always teaching my students, we have to get to the facts. And the fact of the matter is, when we use terms like black on black crime or other terms that say, well, you know, all lives matter, we tend to marginalize the real issue. And the real issue is when we say black on black crime, we're only limiting crime to one cultural or ethnicity. We don't say white on white crime. We don't say Latino on Latino crime. We only say black on black crime. And when we hear and then what we have to do, we have to stop this. Once somebody gets shot and killed by the police, well, you know, one thing we have to do is we have to stop that black on black. We're not talking about that. Let's stick with the issue. There's too much changing of the issue. So if we would learn to change our dialogue and start focusing on the issue, I think things could change.
Greg Jr., do you have many white friends?
I have many white friends.
Do you talk to them about this?
Yes, I do.
What kind of conversations do you have?
I have conversations where we're serious because we know this is a real issue and this is no joking matter.
And their response to your concerns?
To my concerns? They feel the same way about it that I do. They feel like this is mindless violence and there's nothing else to say about it.
Greg Sr., do you think white people are sufficiently outraged over incidents like these?
Not as much. And I think that's the biggest problem. After the Mike Brown incident, I recall reading in an article, I believe it was in the Riverfront Times, and it was a gentleman who was a white gentleman from Kirkwood, and he said, if this would have happened in Kirkwood and Mike Brown's body would have laid out there for 4.5 hours, there would be a national inquiry. There would be outrage everywhere. But he said, but because it was in an urban area, in a poor and low economy area, it tended to get marginalized. And the one thing that the quote I've been passing around lately is, because I'm a huge fan of Dr. Martin Luther King, he said something about we're not going to be, things are bad if our friends remain silent. I'm paraphrasing it. He said we won't be judged by what's happened to us, but by the silence of our friends. And because we have friends from other ethnicities, whether they're white, Latino, Asian, and they're not speaking, the silence appears for some to be complicit. And so if you're not saying, and that's what happened with the Civil Rights Movement. I think there were many good-natured and good-willed whites, like Schwerner and Goodman, who went down to Mississippi in the Mississippi summer. They said, you know something, we're outraged, and they went and did something. They lost their lives, and there is a fear of not so much losing your life, but also being ostracized. Because I have a good friend of mine who lives in Kirkwood, and when President Obama got elected for the first time, she was shocked when she went to her friends' houses and they were having a discussion, and she said she couldn't believe the amount of vitriol and racism that came out of the people that she thought were friends. And they said, well, this is going to be the worst thing for our entire country. This is terrible. I can't believe it. Our country's going down the hill.
You have, as I understand it, a member of your family is in law enforcement.
Yes.
Who would that be? Is that a close relative?
It's a close relative. Uh-huh. It's a close relative.
Well, how do you talk with this relative about this?
And
how,
yes.
How do you look at this relative?
I have a high amount of respect for my relative, which goes along with my respect for law enforcement. I always want people to understand that it's not all law enforcement. Without law enforcement, we would basically be the purge. Everything would be just out of just pure chaos. So I guess it goes back to that quote about King, about the silence of our friends. If there are good, law-abiding, moral, ethical police officers, and they know that there's a bad element among them, the so-called blue code of silence really ruins the, like I said, one bad apple spoils the whole bunch. We have to address, we have to get to these individuals to say, you know something, if this person has a badge and they've been sworn to be a public servant and they are acting in a criminal way, your ethical responsibility would be to report them. And one of the times my family member did is he actually reported some officers who were doing some misdeeds on the job, and he was threatened. And he was basically told, you know, you better watch your back. You know, so I think there's this culture of fear that's been exhibited. And the more we talk about it, instead of talking about the blue code and silence or all lives matter, let's talk about these things and let's define them. I'm a big person. I want to define what that is because many people are not aware of the issues.
Greg Carr Jr., let me put that question to you with regard to this relative. Have you ever had a conversation with this relative about your concerns and your fears?
Not yet, but it will happen soon.
How will you express your concerns, and what will you ask of this person?
I would ask, why? Why would this happen to me? Why wouldn't this happen to somebody else? How could I prevent this? How could I avoid it? How could I learn to not fear it?
Going back to your fears that you expressed a little bit earlier, do you feel differently when you see a white police officer than you do when you see a black police officer?
That's a tough one. Because they could both go either way. Because some black officers are like some white officers, and some white officers are like some black officers. We can't balance out the two just yet.
Greg Sr., your thoughts on that? How do you feel? You've been stopped.
I've been stopped numerous times. Yeah. Even in our own subdivision that my son was discussing, at least three times in the last 13 years, twice I feared for my life. And I think one of the incidents my son is talking about is I was out jogging early in the morning. Actually, I was out for my morning walk, and it was about 5:55 in the morning, just before daybreak. And we had some recent break-ins in our neighborhood. And I had a white Nike hat on, very bright shoes, but I had a black hoodie on. I had my Harris-Stowe hoodie on. And I noticed a car started creeping up beside me, and I went, okay, this can't be happening. And he came right beside me, and he started asking, where do I live? What are you doing? Where are you going? And I mentioned that I was walking, and I'm walking in the middle of the street, and he asked me, where do I live? I told him my street address three times, but he kept asking me this. I said, oh, I see what's happening. He's trying to get me amped up to say something. I said, no. But then shortly after that, he was a white undercover officer. I guess he was in an unmarked car, but then a black police officer in a marked car came up behind me as if to try to take me down. So I'm a state championship wrestler, so I got in the position. I said, hey, you know something? I said, sir, let me tell you something before this gets bad. If I were a robber, do you think I would be walking down the middle of the street with a white hat and white shoes and being reckless? I said, you know something? You're right. You're right. Yeah, I'm going to let you go. I said, that's fine. He said, but where do you live again? And then when I went to one of our city hall meetings, I actually met the gentleman, and he apologized, and he said, well, I apologize because I wasn't sure what street it was. I said, but that's not what my feeling was at 5:55 in the morning. I was afraid.
You know, I'm glad we've had the opportunity to touch base with you guys here today, because it's important that everybody understand in all communities, you know, what you're experiencing and how you're experiencing it. Greg Carr, Senior and Junior, thank you so much for being with us. Pleasure talking to you.
Thank you.
Stay safe out there.
Yes, sir.
This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.